Coming up in this week's programme, we chat with Mark Sisson. Mark answers questions like, do you believe that a healthy diet is preventative medicine? What's your position on dairy? What exercises do you recommend? And so much more. The other week, Alan and I had the pleasure of interviewing Mark Sisson. Mark is a former elite endurance athlete who's made health and fitness his life's work. In his younger days, he was on track to go to medical school, but then changed tracks to follow the dream of making the US Olympic team for the marathon. As the years passed, he realised his calling was as an independent researcher, critical thinker, motivator, and communicator. And his aim was to get people to take responsibility for their health and fitness, and at the same time, inspire them to be open-minded, passionate, and enthusiastic about leading a healthy, happy, fit, balanced and active lifestyle, all done with the least amount of suffering, pain and sacrifice. So let's now join Alan and go over and continue our chat with Mark Sisson.
All right. Well, thank you, Primal Mark. For our listeners, we decided to call Mark Sisson Primal Mark because we have another Mark on the interview as well, Mark Moxham, my partner in crime. So background for our listeners, Primal Mark, can you tell us about yourself and how you came to Primal?
I was an endurance athlete in the 70s and early 80s and was competing at a very high level, doing all the things I thought I needed to do to be healthy in addition to being fit, which included running a lot of miles and eating lots of carbohydrates. And over the years, I got pretty fast and I got pretty competitive at my sports, but I also found that I was falling apart from overtraining as well as from the highly inflammatory nature of a high-carbohydrate diet. So after I retired at an early age from endurance competition, I started investigating ways in which I could continue to become fit on much less work and see if that was even possible, and to try and address some of my physical maladies, which were numerous at the time, because I developed a form of arthritis in my feet. I developed tendonitis in my hips. I had irritable bowel syndrome.
Wow, you sound like an old man already.
Well, I was an old man at 27 or 28. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, my investigations led me to what we now know to be the paleo sort of lifestyle, but I really I flavored it a little bit with a lot of other lifestyle behaviors to come up with what I call the Primal Blueprint, which is this guideline for living a healthy, happy, productive, lean, fit life. And that's what I've been focused on for the last 25 years, is trying to figure out ways in which everybody can access, tap into this genetic recipe that we all have to build a healthy human, but we've somehow lost our way and thwarted it through some of the trappings of modern civilization and modern food production.
Right, right. Well, since I'm a chef and nutritionist and not a doctor or scientist, I will mostly ask you food and nutrition questions. Can you tell us the basic tenets of the Primal Blueprint diet?
Sure. The basic tenets are, it's about getting rid of some of these foods that cause problems. Generally, for most people, that would be getting rid of grains because of the anti-nutrients that are found in grains. We can go into detail on that, but it's about getting rid of simple sugars, so soft drinks and sweetened drinks that people tend to live on these days, the desserts, the cookies, the pies, the cakes. Those are quite inflammatory. And getting rid of the industrial seed oils, which we find sort of throughout the food supply now in processed food. So that would be the soybean oil, the corn oil, safflower, sunflower oil. Those sorts of oils that are high in omega-6, pro-inflammatory omegas, and low in the omega-3 oils. So those are that's basically the sort of the three categories: the grains, the sugars, and those oils. And then what you're left with is a large list of meat, fish, fowl, eggs, nuts, seeds, vegetables, a little bit of fruit. It's quite a cornucopia of wonderful things that we can eat.
Right, right. Speaking about the inflammation part, there's kind of a chicken and an egg thing here. You do mention, and I agree with you, that grains and omega-6 tend to be inflammatory, but what do you think about the potential effect of genetically engineered ingredient on our gut health, which could start the whole inflammation problem as well?
It's a big issue that needs a lot of research and a lot of work. On the one hand, every food that we eat today is somehow genetically engineered in that it was selected for its sweetness or its protein content over years and years and years of agriculture or farming. So right. We need to draw a distinction between that and taking the genetic material from an animal or a bacteria and injecting it into a plant and then genetically modifying that organism and selecting it because of its resistance to pesticides or fungicides. So right, there are right. a lot of yeah. So much of the food that we talk about today and that we include in our diet has been modified.
Right, but that's crossbreeding, and so far it hasn't really made us sick. But what I'm seeing in my clientele is that the past 10 years we have an enormous resurgence of gut-related disease that did not exist before, even though we've been eating grains for a long time. So that's why I suspect GMOs, which officially started to be commercialized around 96, has a strong effect on our gut health and the inflammation situation.
Yeah, and it could well be. So I'm being as conservative as I possibly can be, stating that I need to see science to make a blanket statement. I'm suspect of GMO products. Absolutely, I'm suspect,
right,
and
right.
it doesn't make sense that that we could immediately introduce a brand new form of food that has never been consumed by humans and to which humans have not had any amount of time to adapt, and expect everybody to have a benign experience with that new
right.
food. So,
right, right. It's not just a newness part of it. It's also the fact that in some case you're introducing a toxin within the food, like BT toxin.
Absolutely.
And at this point, it hasn't been proven that this toxic is not harming us. You know, that's the problem. I mean, once you start ingesting that food with the toxin, then some people like Jeffrey Smith commenting that there's a transference, that toxin stays in our digestive system and starts to completely destroy our, you know, beneficial bacteria, which is important.
It's very important, yeah. I'm very suspect of these things. I just think that there's a lot of work that needs to be done. And there may be some benefit to this concept into the future. But right now, it's a little scary to be taking frankenfoods and testing them on ourselves, or accepting them as universally,
right?
You know, the government would say generally regarded as safe. Well, you know, what does that
right.
mean? Generally regarded
well,
as safe.
Yeah. Sorry to say, but I don't trust FDA or the USDA to tell us what's safe for us to eat or not.
Seriously, Alan? Seriously?
Yeah. call me a French skeptic, but yeah. My big issue right now is GMO. Actually, I'm finishing a book on the subject, and it's my battle, you know, mission right now to try to educate people into how potentially dangerous genetically engineered food is. Not even mentioning what some people might see, the anti-God message that goes into that, but let's not get into this. Moving along, how is your version of the paleo diet different than Dr. Cordain, Rob Wolf, or Chris Kresser, for example?
Yeah, well, it seems that these paths are starting to converge a little bit. When I first came out with the Primal Blueprint, I wanted to be as inclusive as possible. So I looked at, again, the science, and I sort of parsed from that probably everybody would benefit from avoiding wheat, for instance, and most of the grains, the barley, the millet, the rye. I also recognized that while strict paleo seemed to preclude dairy, there are a lot of elements of dairy that I considered either beneficial or at least harmless with a lot of people. Now, if you're lactose intolerant, that's a different issue. But if you have no problem with lactose, if you retain the lactase-producing capability into your adulthood, then I saw that there were some aspects of dairy that might not only benefit health, but actually, you know, round out a diet and provide a lot more gustatory pleasure by its inclusion. Similarly, there was initially an aversion to alcohol of all forms in the original paleo diet, and I recognized early on that there was a spectrum of best choices to worst choices, and on the far end of the spectrum in terms of better choices was red wine, and so I sort of included that in the Primal Blueprint eating strategy. And then ultimately, I came out originally with the statement that I never met a saturated fat I didn't like. It's a bit of a blanket statement, but the reality is that I'm not as afraid of saturated fat as the initial investigations of Cordain would have supposed. And later he's come around, as have a lot of other people in the paleo community, to recognize that most forms of saturated fat are probably beneficial up to a point, just like anything is benefit, or you know, anything has a kind of a bell curve attached to it, and some amount of saturated fat is beneficial and healthy, and again adds to a well-rounded diet. So, but I see that the original paleo adherents who were strict paleo are starting to come around and appreciate saturated fat a little bit more. They're allowing a little bit more dairy, a little bit of chocolate, some red wine now and then. So I do see a convergence. Again, my whole thesis here was eliminate the bad stuff that has been proven to cause harm in a lot of people, and try it for 30 days or 60 days and see what the effects are on you. And then if you feel like you want to reintroduce some of those things one at a time and try to identify what the true culprit is, that's fine. I'm looking at this from a pure motivation of enjoying my life. I want to eat food that I enjoy at every meal. I want to enjoy every bite of food that I eat. I don't want to feel like this is a diet at all. I don't want to feel like it's a lifestyle of deprivation. I want to feel like this is a lifestyle of inclusion. What can I eat? Tell me what I can eat, and I will include that on my list of things, and then as much variety as I can put in there so that I get to experience as many of these sensory pleasures almost hedonistically, because that's my goal, is to enjoy my life from here on out.
Right, right. As a Frenchman and a French chef, you got me at red wine, chocolate, and cheese.
Oh, yes.
So, and I absolutely agree with you. The food should be edible and tasty, otherwise people will not stick to it. For our low-carb crowd out there, which is at this point, the majority of our listeners, how would you compare the Primal Diet to the Atkins Diet, for example?
I think the Primal Blueprint strategy is, and this is kind of one of the things I lead off all of my talks with, I do feel that the less glucose you burn in a lifetime, the better off you are.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
Right. Within reason, that doesn't mean that everybody has to be in ketosis all the time. What it does mean, however, is that this almost blanket approval or recommendation by, say, the U.S. government that we should have 300 or 400 or 500 grams of carbohydrates a day is ridiculous. I think nobody other than an elite athlete or a very hard physical laborer requires more than, say, 150 grams of carbs a day to get to move about their life and be very functional and fit and lean. So I created this carbohydrate curve years ago that identifies different ranges of carbohydrate intake generally. And again, this isn't necessarily a hard and fast rule, but it's a guideline that basically stops at 150 grams a day. So 0 to 50 grams of carbs a day, you can pretty much stay in ketosis. 50 to 100 is what I would call a good kind of low-carb strategy for a lot of people who want to gradually lose their excess body fat but still want to be able to enjoy meals that contain salads and steamed vegetables and some fruit. 100 to 150 grams of carbs a day, which is generally where I land, allows me to, as long as I don't have the sugar and I've cut out the bread, the pasta, the cereals, and all the other forms of carbs that I used to have, allows me plenty of leeway to get all of the vegetables that I want to have to round out every meal, right, and a little bit of fruit, during the day. So I am still a fan of low carb eating, and I don't think that it's been proven. Going back a couple of years when the whole idea of safe starches and carb refeeds and all of this stuff came in, I think there was the pendulum swung back to people tending to now overdo carbs again, taking in 300, 350, 400 grams of carbs a day. And I just think that's too much for just about anybody.
Yeah. I like how you use the character Grok to describe the paleo human. Can you tell us who Grok is, and do you think that Grok would survive in our modern society?
Yeah, so Grok is a prototypical hunter-gatherer we plucked out of our imagination. Theoretically lived about 10,000 years ago. So his genes are essentially identical to ours. He was a hunter-gatherer who moved about from place to place looking for roots, shoots, tubers, nuts, berries, the occasional kill of an animal. Had a family, was generally a peaceful lad, and we use him as kind of the iconic hunter-gatherer to just sort of ask, what would Grok do in this situation? Well, now you ask, would he survive today? He would, but it would be tough because he would be faced with the same choices that we're faced. He'd walk into a convenience store, and there in front of the counter would be 800 variations of candies and gums and nasty snacks, and he would be tempted to eat those because his brain was hardwired to seek out sweet things, just as ours is today. So a lot of people who sort of try to understand this device and go, well, what would Grok wouldn't eat that? He wouldn't eat a ding dong or a ho ho or any kind of a pastry. He absolutely would, because it would be perceived by him as a quick source of calories that he could chow down on and deal with the consequences later. Right. The problem is that these sorts of foods, these processed foods and snacks and candies and cookies and sodas and sweetened drinks, they're ubiquitous. They're everywhere. So it's not as if it's not like they're scarce and now you chow down on them now and you store all those calories as fat for a later famine. The later famine never happens.
No. Unfortunately, the problem with for people that have a low budget is that the most accessible foods are loaded with carbs and sugar and artificial everything. So my belief is that good quality food is your medicine, should be your medicine, and should be also preventative. Do you believe that a healthy diet is preventative medicine or should be?
Well, absolutely. As I say in all my books, 80% of your body composition is determined by how you eat. So you can't really go into a gym and expect to exercise away a bad diet. But well beyond that, and for me, essentially all of my physical ailments disappeared when I started to treat food as medicine, and I started to eliminate the toxic things and incorporate some of the more beneficial therapeutic food. Some foods have what we call a pharmacodynamic effect. I mean, omega-3 oils have an anti-inflammatory effect. And some of the herbs and spices that we put in our foods, have polyphenols and antioxidants that can help us deal with stress. So there are there's a lot more to this general statement that let food be thy medicine. It's quite intricate. Yeah.
Right. And I suspect that if food certain foods are created to be tasty, they also were meant to be healthy for you as well. Not the manufactured food, not the processed food, just a natural version of it.
Absolutely. And to your point, I mean, as a Frenchman, you grew up with an acknowledgement that a large percentage of the family budget went to food. I mean, I look at some of the
Absolutely.
Some of the numbers for how much of the annual budget Europeans in general allocate to food, and it's like 27, 28, 29% of the budget goes to food. It's a real recognition, not just, you know, of the health component and the fact that there's a real acknowledgement in the scientific community that food can have these effects. It's just a cultural thing. It's just food.
Food is enjoyed by
Europeans much more than by Americans.
It's what we do. It's what we eat. What we talk about. It's also an excuse for any kind of social, meeting, getting together. I mean, every time you see a French movie, what do you see typically? There's either food or sex or both.
You know, in all French movies, right?
And always the wine. And always the wine. Always, in both cases. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Always the wine. Yes. Yes. There's a perception out there that us paleo groks, all we do is eat raw meat and plenty of it. What's your take on that? And can you explain why maybe we should not eat so much meat?
It's a budgetary thing. It's a culinary choices, gustatory choices. There's no reason to be consuming vast quantities of meat on a daily basis in order to earn your paleo or primal membership card. We do have that sort of reputation, if you will, as being obligate carnivores.
Right.
And yet there are a number of people in the community, particularly Mark's Daily Apple, who, you know, are vegetarians, and they're fine with that. They can be vegetarian paleo or vegetarian primal. It really is, once again, about eliminating the bad stuff. It's about getting rid of the toxic foods more than it's about eating meat or including some of the high-fat foods.
If you go to a Texan steakhouse, you see people eating a big old slab of meat, and that could potentially lead to some health issues. What's your daily recommendation protein-wise?
It's declined a little bit in the last couple of years, but I would say, and it depends a lot on the person, the age, the amount of activity. But, you know, some elderly women, small elderly women, could get by on 50 grams of protein a day quite nicely, 40 or 50 grams of protein. Some young athletic men who are really hitting it hard might truly require 150 to 175. But once again, I don't think anybody requires 200, 250 grams of protein a day. And at some point, even if it doesn't become harmful, it just becomes unnecessary and wasteful to consume that much when there are so many other choices to round out your menu. And you're right, I go into a Texas steakhouse and, you know, you see a 48-ounce T-bone on the menu, and I think to myself, God, there was a time when I probably could have finished that on a bet, but why?
Yeah.
And there are so many times where I'll go to a place and order a piece of meat and realize that, and this is a skill that we develop in the paleo and primal community, and that skill is the ability to recognize when you're no longer hungry for the next bite. So it's not about being full. When you're full, it's sometimes too late. It's really asking yourself, all right, knowing that there's food around every corner, am I truly hungry for this next bite? And if the answer is no, I can either wrap it up and take it home. I can just push this plate aside and have them take it away, whatever. But it becomes a skill to allocate a certain amount of space in your stomach and be okay with using that. And then recognizing that hunger – in many cases, it's driven by psychological factors rather than the true biochemistry of hunger that's going on in your body right now.
I mean, there's been a known story, a study done, I believe it was in Sweden during the war, that discovered that when people were forced to eat less, they were actually healthier. Mm. So, you know, being there's a difference between getting enough nutrients and stuffing your face or feeling full, which is not necessarily the healthy way to go about it.
I go to some of these conferences, these paleo conferences, and I look at people piling stuff up on their plate, and I think, really? Is this how you eat all the time? No wonder you're not getting the results that you seek.
Well, that's the magic of free food.
You know, you say the magic of free food, but then it just transcends into cheap food. So when food is inexpensive and restaurants are serving gargantuan portions. We have a place in that's based in L.A. called the Cheesecake Factory. I don't know if you have those in your area.
We have it in Austin, yes.
You know, they say you could feed a village on some of the portion sizes that you get at the Cheesecake Factory. And, you know, God bless them for trying to appeal to the American appetite and requirement for value. But at some point, it becomes obscene. Mm-hmm. Now, with the Primal Blueprint, what we try to do is we try to teach people how to become good fat burners. We teach people how to burn off their stored body fat through manipulating hormones via diet, and that's this low-carb approach. So when you become good at burning off your stored body fat, when you become good at accessing ketones, you unburden your body of this regular requirement for more glucose every 3 or 4 hours. And one of the great things that happens is your appetite starts to self-regulate. You don't get hungry every couple of hours because of low blood sugar. You've fixed that part about you. You don't feel the need to rip someone's head off if you skip a meal. You just go about your day knowing that the 500 calories that you're going to burn over the next 8 hours is going to come from your thighs or from your belly instead of from a plate. And that's a real, again, another skill that we teach and that we hope people will develop through the Primal Blueprint is this ability to access stored body fat to the point that appetite regulates and then when you do sit down at a meal, there's not the tendency to overeat or to gorge or to leave the table feeling guilty because you know that you overate or you gorged, but you just couldn't control yourself. So there's a real element of control in this as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Control and discipline as well. on the exercise end of things, I know you used to be a runner. I personally don't like running, but I used to play tennis and until I hurt my shoulder. But nowadays, the extent of my exercise is walking and dancing. What's your recommendation for the average Mark or Alan out there?
Well, first of all, walking and dancing are great. So walking is still one of the best things that humans can do. And I try to encourage people to get a couple of miles of walking in every day. Whether it's after this interview, I'm going to go for a hike. And I'll go for about an hour and a half hike, and it'll be a highlight of my day. So it's not as if, oh my goodness, I have to go hike. This is such drudgery. When will it be over? It's actually a form of play for me. So walking is something everybody should do. In fact, I have my employees at my office all have treadmills under their desks. So they can walk while they're at their stand-up desk and do their work. So they don't have to feel like they have a workout hanging over their head all day that they have to get when they get home from work. But then I try to incorporate as much play into my life as possible. So I'll go stand up paddling in the middle of the day. So I'll go out on a paddleboard, on a surfboard for an hour and a half and paddle around the dolphins and hang out. At no point will I ever feel like it's a workout, even though it's a great workout. Yeah. I'll feel like it's fun. I play Ultimate Frisbee once a week, and that's my hardest workout of the week because it's just a lot of fast sprinting and changing directions and jumping maybe inappropriate for a 60-year-old man, but I'm going to do it as long as I can. And then I do spend some time in the gym. I do 2 full-body routines a week in the gym, fairly intense stuff. So it's body weight things like push-ups, pull-ups, dips, squats, lunges, things like that. And I do one other than the Frisbee game, I do one sprint workout, which is typically now on a bike in the gym. But depending on how recovered I am from the week, from the game a week, I might go to the beach and do some wind sprints on the beach. But sprinting is a critical part of my exercise regimen because it's about getting the heart rate elevated for brief periods of time to what amounts to a max level. This seems to have very broad and far-reaching positive benefits in the body that you can't achieve by that monotonous 45-minute treadmill run, and yet the sprint workout is over in 15 or 20 minutes.
Right. But for the people that's starting out in this new way of life, lifestyle, starting slowly, what would you recommend to start with?
Well, so I have a free book on Mark's Daily Apple. Here comes the plug, Alan. And Mark, here comes the plug. I have a free book called Primal Blueprint Fitness, and you can download it. It's a 92-page book that shows the four basic movements that everyone should be doing and teaches a progression of those. So, for instance, push-ups. There's a progression of push-ups. I think it's one of the greatest exercises ever invented. Not a lot of people can do one push-up, but we start with very easy progressions and work our way up. Same with a pull-up. Same with a squat. Everybody should be doing squats. And even if you have bad knees, you should be doing some variation of squats assisted either with a post or a pole, or there, again, any number of progressions that you can introduce. And as you move from one progression to the next, you become stronger and stronger.
Right. Well, I do my squats when I play pétanque. You know what pétanque is?
Remind me.
It's a French ball game. It's also called boule, and it's a game you play with steel balls, and it's kind of like
you squat down to as you go to toss the ball, you squat down
right.
and raise up.
Yeah. Exactly. So that's right. that adds to my range of exercises. so on the another tenet which I like a lot, because being from the south of France, I'm a big fan of relaxing on the beach and taking a nap once in a while. What are the stress-relieving ideas do you have to suggest to our listeners, keeping in mind that Americans are always busy all the time?
Yeah. Well, one of the things I do every day, part of my routine, and it's sort of a anti-stress routine, is, and not everybody can do this, but there are variations, is I have a pool that is unheated in my backyard. And so I go out around 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and as a break, I will walk into my pool. And in the wintertime, it'll be in the low 50s Fahrenheit, and just hang out there for a couple of minutes and submerge and get cool. And then I'll come out and I'll air dry in the sun. And so I just let myself dry off in the sunshine to the extent that it's a sunny day. If it's not a sunny day, then I just dry off. I towel off. But that little combination of the immersion into the cold water and then letting the sun hit me so I get the vitamin D, the benefits of the vitamin D from the sun, and there's a transition point between being not numb from the cold but chilled from the cold, and the transition into being warmed by the sun, it's almost like a drug. It's unbelievable how de-stressing that is and how it enables me to go back to work fresh. Now, if you're in the middle of Chicago and it's in the wintertime, you can't really do that. But you can. But there are parts of this country where you can take a break in the middle of the day and just go out and hang out in the sun. And there's meditating with your shirt off or with shorts on in the sun has that dual effect of gathering up vitamin D, which is a mood elevator in and of itself, and just, you know, the warmth of the sun and the ability to just be still for a while and maybe meditate on, what I would call a gratitude process, where you think about all the wonderful things that you do have in your life,
right?
And you focus on your appreciation of those, what you've done, the people in your life that you've created for yourself, and it's as de-stressing as you can possibly get, I think, and it's a necessary part of everybody's daily strategy.
Yeah, I do my 30 minutes meditation in the morning, but I've never thought of doing it in the sun, so I'll make a point of doing that now. Thank you for that advice. That's very good.
It's multitasking, Alan.
Absolutely. The American way.
Yeah.
Speaking of vitamins, I understand you have a line of supplements. What are your suggestions about taking supplements on the paleo diet?
Well, I make supplements for myself primarily, because I always looked at the areas in my life that I wanted to maximize what was behind the science. So I believe, for instance, we talked earlier, we touched on the idea of gut biome and gut health, and the fact that a lot of people are negatively impacting the healthy bacteria in their gut, either through antibiotics, foods that may contain antibiotics, stress, just poor choices of a high sugar diet, which will feed the bad bacteria. And so there are all these aspects of our lives that would suggest that we'd be better off eating dirt, because our soil has all these beneficial bacteria that we took in for millions of years. Well, I'm not suggesting everybody go out in their backyard and start eating dirt, because there's a lot of other toxic accumulation of metals in there. So the easy answer is to take a probiotic. So I make a probiotic supplement for myself. It's a spore-formed probiotic, so it gets through the digestive process in the gut and starts to introduce the signals to the colon that says we need to increase the number of good bacteria, healthy bacteria. That's right. One simple example of what I would recommend just about everybody do. I make a omega-3 fish oil supplement because I think we don't get enough omega-3 in our regular diets. And if we do, it's because we've been so aggressively pursuing line-caught salmon and grass-fed steak and so on and so forth. But a much easier way is just to pop a couple of omega-3 pills. And that's really – it's taking advantage of modern technology, but recognizing the expectation of these hunter-gatherer genes that we possess.
Right.
I do make a very high-potency antioxidant formula. It's called the Master Formula. Actually, it's called the Damage Control Master Formula. And it's quite literally the world's biggest collection of these broad-spectrum antioxidants. So it's got CoQ10 and alpha-lipoic acid and grapeseed extract, green tea extract, milk thistle, N-acetylcysteine. Right. It's got all these nutrients, phytonutrients, and components that the body theoretically uses to help ward off the devastating effects of reactive oxygen species of oxidation.
Right. Yeah,
and again, and it's a controversial topic, particularly in the paleo world, because a lot of people come to paleo because of its simplicity and its minimalism and its DIY component, where I'm going to fix my own food and I'm going to avoid all processed foods and I'm going to access these different levels of gene expression that I can through my food choices. And that's all great. That's all well and good. But again, I'm looking at not just how can I be healthy, but how can I live the longest and stay healthy.
Right.
That's the impetus for my creating this line of supplemental food products.
Right. Going back to the dirt issue, I've had this theory for a long time because I was raised in France and I was, romping around the grounds. And even though my grandma would tell me, wash your hands, you know they're not sanitized. So I'm sure that as kids, we absorbed some of that into our system, which helped us build a much stronger immune system, whereby in America, everything is so sanitized and everything is so clean that one doesn't have a chance to build a strong immune system. Do you think that's a valid thought?
Absolutely. I wrote about this in my book, The Primal Connection, where the recipe that we have, this genetic recipe to build a healthy human, includes the requirement that we expose ourselves to germs throughout our lives, because the immune system learns from its exposure to these microbes. And in most cases, what it learns is how to combat bigger, badder germs later on. The irony is that in avoiding germs, in becoming sanitized, kids today grow up without any sort of exposure to mild pathogens that would strengthen their immune system. Just the way you go to a gym and you lift weights to build muscle, you expose yourself to some of these germs and microbes, and your immune system learns what it needs to do to protect you from worse exposures.
Absolutely.
And as a result, we have kids today who have asthma. Asthma is rampant. Hay fever is rampant. Food allergies.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing the number of kids who have. When I was growing up, I don't think I certainly didn't know a kid who had a peanut allergy, and I'd only heard of a couple of instances. Now it seems like every school has a sign saying, you know, this is a peanut-free or a nut-free zone, and warning every parent not to bring anything that contains any kind of nuts in case someone else's child gets exposed to it. So there are a lot of these food sensitivities that have developed as a result of this lack of exposure to germs early on. And even, you know, we go back to the initial population of a otherwise pristine newborn child, which is down the vaginal tract, and all of the messiness of childbirth is
right.
part of the intention there is to inoculate the newborn with these bacteria from the mother.
Absolutely.
Well, now
yeah.
you do a cesarean section almost routinely now for any potential complication, and you avoid that. And then women don't breastfeed anymore, which is another source of of this. And so you have these kids who are growing up in a pristine environment who are then sanitizing themselves with Purell, who are being right. Told not to go out and play in the dirt. And it's in the context of a civilized world where we think we're doing the right thing, we're actually doing exactly the wrong thing.
Absolutely. And we are, all three of us are young enough to remember the days you used to play dirty and nothing came out of it. You get scrapes and cuts and bruises and, you know, running nose, and that's how your body would defend itself and, you know, it would heal itself and learn how to defend itself. Before I even read your blog, for a while now, my dinner routine has been mixed green salad with an assorted amount of proteins, nuts, seeds, and I, you know, drizzle with my own homemade dressing, which I call my healing dressing, because it's got, you know, apple cider vinegar, fermented, you know, fermented healthy foods in it. And I discovered about your daily huge salad bowl. Can you tell us how that works for you?
Sure. I have this thing called the big ass salad, and typically it's my lunch, and throw in a lot of greens and whatever forms of nuts I have handy, and typically some form of protein. Today it'll probably be some tuna fish, but some days it's a chicken breast, and some days it's maybe a steak or lamb left over from the night before. And same thing, and I put loads of what I would consider health-enhancing salad dressings on this. You know, for the longest time, we have been warned, oh, use salad dressing sparingly because it's not good for you. And it's really the elements of the greens and the other vegetables that are in the salad that you're looking to utilize. I'm introducing a line of product called Primal Kitchen in a few months, and it's bottled dressings and toppings made with just great ingredients like coconut oil and olive oil and lots of phytonutrients and lots of other what we call functional foods. And and part of our marketing is do not use sparingly. You know, put this stuff on as much as you want, because every ounce of this that you add to your salad is adding to the health benefits, not detracting from.
Absolutely, as long as the quality ingredients that will help you, you know, good quality olive oil, you know, virgin coconut oil, fermented, you know, real vinegar, not refined vinegar from grains, for example. I like to add miso to mine. That's another fermented food. So it helps, reseed my digestive system at the same time that I'm getting good quality fats into my diet.
Absolutely.
A quick question for you there, Mark. How did you come up with the concept of the primal blueprint?
I've used the word primal for 30 years. My first publishing company was called Primal Urge Press. I had a company called Primal Fitness. I've always been interested in the in evolution, so that sort of has informed all of my studies and all of the direction that I've taken in terms of my way of living. Mm. The blueprint just fell into place about 10 years ago. I was trying to come up with a brand that I thought would have staying power, that would transcend just the whole concept of evolution, because primal doesn't just mean ancient; it means primary. Or first. So it became the Primal Blueprint. It was fully intended to be a brand, which I've then grown over the past 8 or so years into Primal Nutrition. I have a product called Primal Fuel. The Primal Blueprint obviously is my book. I have the Primal Connection. So as many different ways as I can use the term primal, I will.
Obviously, along those lines, with the different books that you've got out, is there anything new coming up in the pipeline?
I now publish a lot of other books by other authors. So we have a book coming out in a month called Paleo Girl, which is for young women who want to really get the true inside information on what it takes to be a happy, healthy young lady in today's world. It's an amazing book. I think it's going to appeal to a lot of teen girls and teen boys as well, but it's primarily aimed at teen girls. My wife is finishing a book called Primal Woman, and she's been working on that for about a year and a half. That'll be out in about 4 or 5 months. I have a book called Primal Endurance. You see a theme here with this use
just
of word?
Slightly, just primal. Slightly, yeah.
Yeah, and the Primal Endurance book is on how to be able to compete in endurance events without beating yourself up and being smart about how you train and then even more smart about how you fuel yourself during these events.
That sounds good. And yeah. That's coming out in about 4 months' time, you say?
Yes, exactly.
So if people want to get more information from you and about you, where's the best place for them to go?
Well, always marksdailyapple.com. That's the blog, and there's something new and exciting there every day. Mm-hmm. And any of the products can be found at primalblueprint.com, and there are links from the blog to that as well.
Sounds good. Well, thank you very much, Primal Mark, for being with us today. And Mark, I'll let you close.
Just again, thanks for sparing the time to chat with us.
Sure, and, my pleasure.
We look forward to hearing more about you and from you in the coming months. Thanks
Great.
Again.
Thank you.